From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, March 24th, 2017. And on this day, reaction in Maine to today's House GOP move to pull its Obamacare replacement from consideration. Lots of ideas being floated by state lawmakers on how to spend new tax money generated from the retail sale of recreational marijuana. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan's decision today to halt a scheduled vote on the bill repealing key provisions of the Affordable Care Act has spared Maine's GOP congressional members from having to make a difficult political decision. Steve Missler has more.
The decision to abruptly pull the American Health Care Act after over 4 hours of debate came after Speaker Ryan realized he didn't have enough GOP votes to pass it. The vote was billed as Republicans' first chance to fulfill a 7-year promise to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, and for President Donald Trump to make good on one of his leading campaign pledges. But the decision also means that Republicans on the fence won't have to take a vote that many in the GOP worried could have electoral consequences. Among them, Representative Bruce Poliquin. Poliquin was an early supporter of the bill, but later said it needed changes. Even as the debate unfolded Friday, Poliquin's office said the congressman had not yet made up his mind. Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins was more outspoken about her opposition to the original bill. Late amendments to the proposal were designed to win the support of moderates like her, but Collins told Maine Public Radio before the House debate that she needed more details. Collins also says that President Trump's ultimatum to Congress to either pass the bill or live with the consequences of the ACA did little to unite two disparate factions of the Republican caucus.
A take-it-or-leave-it approach I've never seen work very well in Washington.
Collins also highlighted elements of the bill that would make it difficult for any member of the Maine delegation to support it. They included projections that premiums would soar for Mainers age 50 to 64 who are living in rural areas.
That's the definition of the state of Maine.
That means Republicans like Collins and Poliquin were spared from voting on a proposal that could hurt key constituencies. Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree and Independent Senator Angus King have repeatedly called the bill a bad deal for Maine. In a statement, Pingree says the canceled vote was a huge win for the state. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The lack of support for the GOP health care bill has Maine consumer advocacy groups and health care providers breathing sighs of relief. For now. Patty White reports.
Consumer and provider groups across the U.S., including many in Maine, opposed the Republican bill. Robin Merrill is executive director of Maine Equal Justice Partners.
I'm feeling relief for all of the people who would have lost their health insurance coverage if this bill had moved forward.
Maine Equal Justice Partners was particularly concerned about the Republican bill's proposed changes to the Medicaid program. Merrill says it would have limited federal funding to states by instituting per capita caps or block grants.
That would have taken $1 billion out of Maine over 10 years and taken health care coverage away from tens and thousands of Mainers. I mean, it just would have been devastating for our state.
The Republican bill would have also eliminated the individual and employer mandate, changed premium subsidies to be calculated according to age versus income, and allowed insurance companies to charge older consumers 5 times as much as younger consumers. A late-stage negotiation would have also allowed states, rather than the federal government, to decide which essential health benefits insurers could cover. None of these changes, says Emily Brostek of Consumers for Affordable Healthcare, would have been an improvement.
It was going to cover fewer Americans. They made changes that meant it was going to cost more. And so I'm very, very glad and in some ways not surprised that they're pulling this bill. Nobody seemed to think that this was the right choice for America to move forward with.
The bill would have also eliminated federal Medicaid reimbursement for Planned Parenthood. Federal dollars cannot fund abortions except in extreme circumstances. So Planned Parenthood of Northern New England's Nicole Clegg says the defund measure would have jeopardized patient access for services such as cancer screenings, disease testing, birth control, and maternity care.
And resulted in people just not having access to the life-saving care that we provide every day.
Though the Affordable Care Act is intact for the foreseeable future, there is widespread agreement that it does have problems. Emily Brostuck of Consumers for Affordable Healthcare says as lawmakers move forward, she hopes they'll build on the ACA.
Find ways to better control costs, including rising pharmaceutical drug prices, which this proposed legislation did nothing to address, and make steps to make insurance more affordable for more middle-income Americans who still can't afford it.
Given the complexity of the current law and the political divides in Congress, that will be no small challenge. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The man in charge of running the Long Creek Youth Development Center in South Portland has been placed on administrative leave, according to published reports. Jeffrey Merrill could not be reached for comment. But as Susan Sharon reports, his leave comes after a series of incidents have raised questions about policies and safety for youth at the state-run prison.
Corrections Commissioner Dr. Joseph Fitzpatrick told Maine Public Radio he was unable to confirm that Superintendent Merrill was placed on administrative leave or to discuss the reasons for the action. But in comments to the Bangor Daily News and Portland Press Herald, Fitzpatrick said Merrill was taken off the job this week pending an investigation. He did not elaborate. A state police spokesman said he was not aware of any investigation, nor was a spokesman for the Attorney General's office.
I don't think that any one person can be named responsible. It's systemic. It's definitely systemic.
Joseph Jackson is a coordinator for the Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition, who occasionally volunteers at Long Creek. Jackson says he's concerned about a list of issues inside the prison. As an example, he says he was meeting with some inmates on Wednesday when several were pulled out of his group to be questioned about a serious assault with injuries that took place the night before.
This is supposed to be the most secure unit in the facility where this assault occurred. And so there's a lot of things to be thinking about.
Long Creek has been in the spotlight since October when a transgender teenage boy killed himself. An investigation by the Maine Attorney General's office found no criminal wrongdoing, but the boy's mother complained that he had not received adequate mental health treatment. An independent group that oversees Long Creek's policies recently raised concerns about mental health issues in the facility, and earlier this month, three Long Creek inmates were accused by police of stealing and wrecking an SUV after they escaped during a camping trip. It's unclear how long Merrill will remain on leave. Commissioner Fitzpatrick told the Portland Press Herald that Acting Commissioner Colin O'Neill has been put in charge of the facility. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
When recreational marijuana is available for retail sale in Maine sometime next year, it will generate an estimated $12 million a year in taxes. As Mal Leary reports, state lawmakers have all sorts of ideas for how to spend that new money.
$12 million isn't a whole lot of money in a yearly state budget. The total's almost $3.5 billion, but it's still $12 million. And there are many ideas for how to use that windfall emerging from the state house. One bill would dedicate the money to health research. Another would use it to offset cuts in various public health programs. Representative Dale Denno, a Democrat from Cumberland, wants to increase the 10% tax on marijuana sales to 15% as part of a package of taxes aimed at increasing state aid to local schools.
Recreational marijuana tax, as passed by the referendum, is pretty low, so I thought we should bring it up to a more reasonable level.
Denno's legislation would also raise the tax on tobacco products to help boost the state's share of the cost of local schools up to 55% and obviate the need for a 3% surcharge on household incomes over $200,000 that was approved by voters this past fall. But the co-chair of the legislature's Special Committee on the Implementation of Legalization of Marijuana, Republican Senator Roger Cates of Augusta, says it's way too early to start allocating the pot money.
We've got to be very careful in one, number one, how much we try to tax marijuana, because the higher the tax, the more incentive there is for people to go to the black market where there's no tax.
Kate says tax strategy is just one issue the special committee will tackle as it crafts legislation to set up the regulatory framework for sale of recreational marijuana. He would like to see the regulatory costs paid for by fees charged to the retailers so that the tax revenue is all available to the state. Democratic Representative Drew Gattina Westbrook, who co-chairs the Appropriations Committee, says there is no shortage of ideas about how to spend that new tax revenue.
It's good that when people are putting bills in that they're trying to think about ways to get them funded, because I think that's, you know, always a challenge. But at the end of the day, we just don't really know. You know, I think we're a long ways from figuring out what the right path is.
Gattin says some would like to have the marijuana revenues go into the general fund to support a broad array of services. And some suggest that in light of all the uncertainty in Washington, that money should be set aside to mitigate any future federal budget cuts. And then there's Tony Donovan of the Sierra Club.
The new tax revenues that are expected from the sale of recreational marijuana, we see as an opportunity to fund investment in passenger rail as a way of supporting freight transportation, particularly for the agricultural industry.
Senator Cates says he's also seen proposals that would use the money to offset cuts in programs in the two-year state budget now being negotiated. He says it's important to remember that it will take some time to generate any tax revenue from marijuana sales in Maine.
We won't be collecting any tax dollars to be able to spend it for at least a year, if not more. Anybody who's looking to it as a source of funding for this year, it just isn't going to happen.
Cates expects there'll be more ideas for how to use the money, particularly in the second session of the legislature next January, when many of the lingering questions about taxing the new product will have been answered. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And for Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, March 24th. Thanks to Jennifer Mitchell, Keith Shortall, and our digital team, I'm Ed Morin.